Good morning. This is Nick Augustine with Attorney Joseph Froebel for the Chicago Bankruptcy Podcast. Gobble, 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 gobble. It's Thanksgiving time coming up, and we're here to talk about being thankful for bankruptcy and embracing your right to a fresh start. Joe, why not be thankful for bankruptcy? It's Thanksgiving. There's a lot to be thankful for, and even though it might sound a little funny, it's true.
Well, you're right. It does initially sound funny to be thankful for bankruptcy because the word for most people has such a bad connotation. Like nobody wants to be bankrupt. Nobody wants to file bankruptcy. But the reason we have this as our topic for today, the bankruptcy laws in the United States are pretty unique. They allow much more flexibility for people than in other Western countries. You have an opportunity if you need a bankruptcy because you're having financial problems. You have an opportunity to either get rid of your debt, get on with your life, and nothing at all changes in your life other than this chunk of debt that sits on your head every night when you go to sleep is gone.
Yeah.
Or if you do the other bankruptcy, the Chapter 13, you get control of your debts, set up a repayment plan, pay them back in full or in part, and again, continue with your life, have your family, make money, be a productive citizen.
It's so the most important thing, I think, is to take away the roadblocks, and we put our own roadblocks in front of us, and those roadblocks are often fear, shame, guilt, insecurity generally, the sense of failure, not measuring up. And it's interesting in our country how many people go straight into a divorce and child custody situation and seem to sometimes walk away unscathed, feel no guilt, no shame. They're proud of taking charge of their life and everything else. But why can't we do this with bankruptcy? And so, you know, we think about all the things in the commercials and TV. Don't file bankruptcy. This will happen. All these bad things. But you know what, Joe? What are all the bad things that happened to all the people that you've helped over the years? I mean, where are they now? You know, are they, you know, five? Come on.
Well, those commercials are usually for companies that want your business that don't do bankruptcy. They will either attempt to consolidate your debt, and sometimes it works where they try to work with your creditors for you. But I've had so many occasions over the years where a client comes to me and it needs to file bankruptcy because that consolidation doesn't work. So what's the negative of bankruptcy? Well, people are always afraid of what's going to happen to my credit. What's going to happen to my credit? My experience has been either that when they're filing, their credit score is already bad, and the bankruptcy either will make it a little bit worse or a lot worse, but that's your credit score, and you can rehabilitate that. Or the clients who actually come in with a good score are in reality fooling themselves, because many of them use one credit card to pay another card to keep their accounts current, but they can't really afford what they're doing. It's sort of a Ponzi scheme. So the negatives, credit is not an issue. You can rebuild if you're working and making money once your bankruptcy is completed. Depending on the economy and your income at the time and what you saved up. If you've never been a homeowner, I've had so many clients become homeowners 2, 3, 4 years after a bankruptcy. You can refinance a house if you already have one. getting credit cards again, getting car loans. It's all doable. So there's no negative with regard to credit based upon what I just said. And the only other negative is in your own mind. I think I'm a pretty nice guy, but people don't want to see me because they don't want to deal with bankruptcy. In a way, there's an admission of, oh, I failed. Well, life is all about starting over. As a Chicago Cubs fan, I know that well. Next year. We'll start over. But businesses, for example, the American way is start your own business, a restaurant, a cleaning service. You're an electrician. You start your own company, a trucking company. Thousands and thousands of businesses start every single day, and thousands fail every day. It's a difficult thing to do. It's very hard to create a business and sustain it and make a living. And failing to do so, okay, it happens. You get on with your life. Look at baseball players. The great players fail 70% of the time to get on base. So that stigma in your own that stigma in your own head of I'm a failure, that's what life is all about. And the bankruptcy laws give you an opportunity if you haven't been able to sustain your business, or if you've had other issues where you've run up debt and you haven't been able to pay it because you lost a job, or you've been ill, or a family member's ill and you needed the money to help them, or you helped a family member because they had issues of their own. Bankruptcy is a way to get out from under this, and nothing changes in your life other than this debt is gone or it's under control.
Right. Joe, when we talk about people being their own worst critic and their all stuff that's in their head, sometimes a lot of that is very difficult for people to get past, especially when they're concerned about their perceptions of religious rules, for example. That's something that we've talked about before, and the source of bankruptcy is, in fact, biblical.
It definitely is. In fact, many of our laws and our ethics come from the Bible, but there are provisions in the Bible where you are able to get out from under your debt. Usually this would be something dealing with, for example, you have a poor farmer and a richer farmer, and the poor one can't even afford to get seeds for planting. So he's loaned seeds from his wealthier neighbor, and how does he pay back? Since currency was not used as it is today, he would pay back by working for the neighbor or giving a portion of what he would grow. And that could be done for whatever, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever they work out. But the provision would be that after the seventh year, if the debt was still in existence and hadn't been repaid, the debt is gone. What we've done with our modern laws, we've taken that same idea, and the debt you accumulate, let's say for credit cards that you've needed to use for medical bills or that you've used to help fund your business, the bankruptcy law allows that debt to be forgiven and you get on with your life. So having the genesis of this, going back thousands of years, a lot of people make changes. When people learn about the origins of bankruptcy law, it does change their attitude as to what they're doing and how they feel about themselves.
It's changing your attitude, exactly. So, just consider a person in a situation where they have their work, their car, home, whatever they're paying for, and they're keeping up with their neighbors, and let's take a person who lives in Highland Park, for example, or Naperville or Chicago, anywhere. And we always think everybody else is making so much more money because everyone's got a fancy car, the fancy brand this, the brand that. And what we don't see is their anxiety and stress about how they're paying for their stuff. And you don't know, that person that you're trying to spend to follow, they might be calling and getting bankruptcy relief themselves because they realize they had a spouse who drove things up or a girlfriend or something or who knows or whatever reason people overspend. And you tell them, imagine that car that you love so much and it's such a cool car and you're going to love it. You're paying $700 a month for it. If that was gone and you had one that was twice its age, but it was paid for or had like half the payment, wouldn't you secretly just really be like thrilled with that? And a lot of people would say yes. Oh, but what will people think? But when you unplug from that whole scenario and you get into control of yourself and paying cash for things and, not like, trying to figure out how to pay minimums on things, you relax. And when you relax, you make better financial decisions. You make better work decisions. Your business is better. Everything's better. It's just that easy. But people can't see it when they're in the middle of the chaos.
No, that's true. It's hard to look at your situation from outside of it when you're just deep inside and surrounded with all the problems. What you're mentioning is the phenomenon of keeping up with the Joneses. You'll see it in TV commercials, particularly with car commercials, and a guy pulls up in an older car and a neighbor pulls up in the brand new one, and the idea is to entice you to purchase. And I think we all will admit for vehicles, there is a kick about having a new car. It's fun to go shopping, except for the haggling. And people, there's a status element to that. But what one really needs to do is be realistic and say, okay, it's really nice to have that vehicle. I'll look cool in it, but I'm going to have trouble paying for it. So I should really buy something that I can afford.
Yeah, or like get the Turo app, T-U-R-O. You can rent it over the weekend. So you want to drive a Porsche, why not? Save up a little money and go rent it for the weekend, then bring it back. Done. And so it's like renting your experience, dipping your toes into that luxury experience. Without, or like Thanksgiving is coming up. Where am I going to take a trip? Am I going to fly to? You could fly yourself to Paris, whatever. Or you could go, downtown Chicago, find a place that, I don't know, what's that, nice restaurant in the Hancock building I used to go to when I was a kid. Go there, enjoy some of the luxury and then go home and do your, take care of people, take care of your stuff. And, Joe, there also might be some people out back there listening and say, oh, this all sounds fine and good if I can just, cash in my chips and start over. But what happens if I make too much money? I've got, bankruptcy means everything they take, right? And it's like, no, that's not true. So let's tell people a little bit about that Chapter 13 payment plan. So if in the fact that they are into vehicles and homes and things that are just, they can't get rid of everything. They can't start over. They make too much or they have too much. What do they do?
Okay, so let's take this scenario. And what I found over the last couple of years, which is different than in previous years, many clients are coming in and they've made up their mind, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm ready. Let's go do bankruptcy. And they're, of course, thinking in their head, Chapter 7, where you eliminate your debt, and they come in and meet with me, and then the mean old lawyer says, hey, you can't do Chapter 7. You have to do a repayment plan. Okay, so what's the scenario for that? I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought for a second. The reason I'm seeing more Chapter 13s, more people are coming in with equity in their home. People are staying the last few years in their houses longer. The interest rates have skyrocketed from what a very, very low rate that's been for a number of years. And someone who's ready to sell, wait a minute, I got a 2% loan. I don't want to go out and buy another house and pay 6 or 7%. So they stay put. They've been in their house longer. They've built up equity. So if you come in considering, thinking that you are ready to file a Chapter 7, you want to get rid of your credit cards, you may not be able to do it because your home has too much equity. People can and do file Chapter 7, get rid of your debt, get rid of their debt, and keep their home depending upon the value of the house, what you could sell it for now compared to your mortgage balance. And that differential, the difference between the value and the mortgage, is different from state to state. So some states are much more liberal. You can have more equity in your house. Some are much less, like Illinois. You can an individual can have $15,000. A husband or wife can have $30,000. So what happens when a client has decided they want to file and they're going to lose their house in a Chapter 7, then of course we're not going to file Chapter 7. We'll set up a payment plan. We will repay their creditors by consolidating them, figuring out a payment plan, making a monthly payment to the Chapter 13 trustee for the county where they live. The trustee will take their money every month, divide it up proportionately, and pay each creditor. And this plan will run anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and the plan will pay all the debt back, 75%, 50%, 20%. So as a lawyer, one of my favorite answers to a question is, it depends. If someone says, how much do I have to pay back? The answer is, it depends. It depends on the equity in your house, and it depends on your budget. So that is something that a experienced bankruptcy attorney can sit down with you and figure that out, explain how it works, and see if it's going to work for you. So those people who think that you lose things that you own in bankruptcy, really not true. There are many ways to keep what you own and take control of the debts that have been controlling you for quite some time.
Yeah. Taking control of debts and also taking control of our assets and how we spend money on things after the bankruptcy, it's more important what you do afterwards, because, you know, you're starting over with a clean slate. You can improve your credit. You can also change your habits, though. And something in the news that I think about right now is the increase in defaults on car loans. And I think about people who have expensive car payments, and then something happens with the vehicle, something goes wrong, and the cost of repairing it exceeds what they have, and people see their only option as trade it in and get something else. But they're rolling negative equity into something else, and they bought these cars, you know, right after COVID for so much money. They owe so much, and now they're worth so little. And it's, you know, rolling over negative equity into, you know, you might have dealerships that aren't going to do these deals. And so people are stuck with cars now that they can't get out of it. You know, it's making those decisions. And, you know, I guess my question is, what conversations have you had with people about making sure things like this don't happen again? And do people, you know, maybe buy cars more in their affordable range, or is that the best plan, like doing some of these like extended warranty plans, or just having money saved up to pay for, you know, car repairs, or just driving cars that are a few years older?
Well, the clients who have taken on a car loan that taps them out every month and say to themselves, how am I going to do this? How am I going to continue to pay my mortgage, pay my rent, cover my living expenses, take care of my kids, and pay for this $750 car?
Not to mention the auto insurance that has gone up, mine included.
Yes, everything. Everything. Over the last few years, in general, prices are like 20 to 25% higher for everything, which is a very big increase. Chapter 7 bankruptcy, where you can eliminate your debt, it allows you, if you have a car loan and you can't handle this car anymore and you just can't handle the payments, and if you give it back voluntarily or if you have it repossessed, you're going to get stuck with a deficiency because the lender will have your car sold. It'll be sold at an auction. It won't get sold for anywhere near what the actual value is. And then the creditor will seek to collect that differential from you. And if you don't pay them, they're going to file a lawsuit. You wind up with a wage garnishment. So if you're faced with such a situation, Chapter 7 allows you to give the car back, owe no money. And then they raises the question, well, what do I do about another car? Getting a vehicle after a Chapter 7 bankruptcy is very, very simple. I've had many clients buy another vehicle the day after the case is over with. And the Chapter 7 runs a little less than 4 months. In fact, many clients tell me that they get inundated with mailings from dealers who check the court records and see that a bankruptcy was filed and send out a notice, hey, come buy a car from us.
Yeah, they have more cash flow now.
They have more cash flow. Well, they're a much better risk, right? They have no other debt. They filed Chapter 7. They just have their living expenses. The problem in that situation is the interest rate's going to be extremely high, but there's a way around that. Put more money down. Don't go in for the $500 down, $1,000 down purchase. The dealers want to entice you. You don't need a lot of money. Come, we'll sell your car. The more money you put down, the more equity you have in your car, and the lower your interest rate is going to be. And then what's really critical is to make certain that the payment you're going to have nicely fits in your budget, not barely fits, but nicely fits in, and then make your payment every single month on time, never be late. And if you do that for a period of time, you may be able to take that loan after a year with a high interest rate and refinance it at a lower rate because you've established a record of on-time payment. So, go ahead.
Good.
Oh, okay. So the people who have a situation with a vehicle that really is something they can't afford, this is a good way around that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that while people will see their credit scores to the extent they watch those will dip down so fast, they can climb up again real fast too. And if you just have to think about the economic systems work best when peep banks and creditors are loaning money because they make money on that interest. They want to loan you money. They want to put you into a car. They want to put, especially because it's collateralized debt, they can grab it. You know, the repo videos I've seen online those guys are quick. but, you know, we want to avoid the repo man coming, and we want to avoid the everything with the wage garnishment. You said when I hear those words, I can almost feel the blood pressure rising in people who are concerned about money that they maybe had that car that they, you know, owed a lot of money on, and they got, you know, someone got a deficiency judgment against them, and now they're threatening to, you know, garnish wages. People are afraid of wage garnishment. They're afraid of losing their job. They're afraid of taking, you know, everything. But isn't there a limit in how much they can take if you do get a wage garnishment? And obviously, like, let's talk about how to stop this wage garnishment.
Well, there's two aspects to that wage garnishment. Number one is the money that comes out of your paycheck every week, which here in Illinois is limited to 15%. But 15% of your check, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
The second aspect, which is for some people could be worse, your employer doesn't want that paperwork. Your employer is served with court papers. They have to fill out forms. They have to file them with the court. And there's enough paperwork in life that all of us have, and your employer doesn't like that. So it's good to avoid. So if you anticipate a wage garnishment coming, and that can and usually will happen after you've been sued and after you've had an opportunity to go to court. You're not going to get a wage garnishment just because you owe money. The creditor has to sue you first. But if you're looking ahead and you see that might happen, contact an experienced bankruptcy attorney in the county where you live and discuss the possibility so you don't have that wage garnishment. Now, what if you had a situation where what many people do is the ostrich approach to their problems? So they get a court summons. They get a court summons. And, I mean, I'm a procrastinator. Ask my wife. I get things done eventually, but I understand procrastination. So you get court papers. All right. I'll deal with it tomorrow. You put them in the kitchen drawer. And then you forget about them because you don't really want to deal with it. It's hard to face those kind of problems. Then a couple months later, you look at your paycheck and you go, oh, my God, I got my wages garnished. So if your wages have already been garnished, filing a bankruptcy, whether it's Chapter 7, whether it's Chapter 13, will stop the garnishment. One of the most powerful aspects, and back to the Thanksgiving theme, which we can be very, very thankful for that it exists, is what's called the automatic stay, S-T-A-Y. When a bankruptcy is filed with the court, at the moment in time, if I filed a case today at 2:13 in the afternoon on November 21st, for my client, that automatic stay is now in effect. That automatic stay says, you, Mr. Creditor, you cannot call me. You can't send me letters. You can't continue with a lawsuit, start a lawsuit. You can't start a garnishment. You can't continue a garnishment. Even the IRS, if they're taking money out of your wages because you have passed through taxes, that garnishment has to stop. So that protection from your creditors is a wonderful aspect of bankruptcy and something to be very thankful for.
I love it. It's such a good thing that, and people, like, their eyes light up when they find out that, wow, this can all go away. Yeah. And there's nothing they can do. And someone sued me for all this money and I can make this judgment go away. Yes, like even if it's your neighbor, that judgment can go away. One thing I wanted to kind of round out on is people, I really do applaud people for the side hustle industries and all the things that people do for extra money nowadays, including driving Uber, for example, or, you know, anything like that that you can get into relatively quickly and easily and make more money. But I heard a story the other day about somebody who was going to ask grandma at Thanksgiving to co-sign for a vehicle because they want to drive Uber, but the vehicle they have doesn't qualify or is too old or whatever the problem is, and they want to buy a cheap car, like an older Camry or something, and, you know, because they get better gas miles, they want to use that for Uber, and they're going to make all this extra money, but they can't, they don't have the money, they can't get the loan, they can't buy the car, they want to ask grandma to co-sign for it. My thought is, huh, I've heard this one before. Like, if you are already behind the eight ball and you need grandma to co-sign for that car so you can earn money for the side hustle, maybe you should find a different way. I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
No question. No question. You really should not involve other family members in your debt. It's going to cause friction. And one of the things I've told many of my clients is you know, you did a very nice thing signing a car loan for your daughter who's 19 years old, but you're here to file a bankruptcy because she couldn't pay and now you're stuck. So co-signing, the idea is, look, I'm helping out. It's family. I should do it. I've had many, many clients filing a bankruptcy because of this good, what they thought was a good deed, co-signing for a family member. That leads me to another point. The world in general thinks, oh, bankruptcy, what did you do wrong? I don't know percentages. A small percentage of people have not used their credit cards properly, but most people wind up filing bankruptcy because something has happened in their life that they really couldn't, not that they couldn't foresee it, but it happened and they had no control. So, for example, you co-signed and your 19-year-old daughter has a pretty good job, but she needed you to co-sign and you did so. Now she lost her job. You're stuck. You got to file a bankruptcy. A family member loses their job. The company went under. So your spouse is now out of work for 6 months. If you're a two-family household and missing that income, it's a big problem. And that's a major factor in people filing bankruptcy is job loss of income through illness, large medical bills. Those are the prime reasons people file. And again, for most people, it's through no fault of their own. So the reason I'm bringing this up is, again, to get rid of that stigma of, oh, my God, I'm doing bankruptcy. Look at it positively. Look at it that I am lucky to live in the United States that has the bankruptcy laws that allow me to continue get on with my life. I'm not stuck in prison because I owe money. I can be productive, a good member of the community, keep my family together, something very much to be thankful for.
Absolutely. You know, and I see all these videos on TikTok about, you know, some girl who says, I moved to Europe because it's so much cheaper and my money goes farther and everything else. But you know, you don't always have that opportunity to just go start a business and make more money. So life gets more expensive, find a way to make more money. And, you know, I hear ads on TV about these people who go around and clean people's trash cans. And it's like, that's a service? Well, if it's something that people want, like a clean trash can, someone will pay to have someone come clean it, boom, there's a business. And, you know, people are finding all sorts of low overhead businesses and things that they can get into and ways to make money that in previous times and without technology just weren't possible. So I really do applaud those who listen to younger generations who think about some of these things and ways that they're making money. And they're making money and they're getting it done and being flexible. Every time you watch a TED talk, for example, on successful CEOs, they talk about flexibility and the opportunities to shift things around in a better way when things beyond your control affect your cash flow and everything else. So it's just, and really, like Joe, like you're saying, by taking that step and did the bankruptcy, you are now taking control of yourself and, you know, hopefully starting something new or great that's going to be fantastic afterwards. And after that bankruptcy is filed, in your head, it's going to be done and gone. Because Joe's your lawyer, and he'll have to, for most situations, he'll be the one going to court and, you know, dealing with things. And, you know, and the person just goes on with their life. And the calls stop. And, well, so it just may seem that it's something that will never end, and it's like a permanent sentence of misery. It can be undone and gone so quickly, and that's the greatest thing. So, Joe, for people who want to find out whether Chapter 7 or Chapter 13, or if they have a small business, and we want to talk about that, what their options are, how should they best get in touch with you and work with you to see whether it's even something that they'll benefit from? I mean, there's no harm in checking it out.
Well, in our current internet age, people are oftentimes looking up many, many things online. You know, when you're shopping, you're looking for reviews, which product is best. So my website has lots and lots and lots of information. We have frequently asked questions. We have previous podcasts to listen to. There's almost no doubt that a question that you have can be answered by going to my website, which is chicagobankruptcy.com. I was pretty lucky to be able to get that. I've had that website many years. You can send me an email. It's my name, Joseph Wrobel, W-R-O-B-E-L, all one word, at chicagobankruptcy.com. And you can even call me directly at 312-804-8416. Yes, it's my mobile phone, and I have no problem taking a call from you right away and answering any questions that you have.
There you go. So I hope that everyone does have a thankful Thanksgiving and eats plenty of turkey and watches good football. And just remember that your family and friends are the forever people, and that's the most important thing.
Very well said.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe, and thank you, everyone, for listening. If you do find this in your LinkedIn or social media or wherever, please do be so kind and share it. People are sometimes shy about sharing stuff about bankruptcy, again, because of that stigma. They need to just get rid of it. And, you know, look forward to 2024 is coming up. It will be a election year, which always gets people kind of riled up. But, you know, the further we get from inflation problems and COVID and everything else, the brighter the future hopefully looks, you know. So I thank you all for tuning in and listening. Thank you again, Joe. I always enjoy these. I'll talk to you soon.
And thank you, Nick. Have a real good Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Hey there, it's Ellen Kay, and I want to know how you panda. I like to start with a chow mein base, a side of fried rice, then a corner of orange chicken, another corner of honey walnut shrimp, add your cream cheese rangoons and an egg roll or two, chopsticks, let's go. Panda Express has something for everyone. However you panda, get rewarded for it. Unlock surprise gifts and exclusive benefits, and all you have to do is download the app today. Get started at pandaexpress.com.
When you've been injured in a car wreck, you're going to hear from an insurance company pretty quickly. And they're going to ask you a bunch of questions I promise you shouldn't answer. I'm attorney Mark Frankel, and I know their tactics firsthand because I used to work for them. When we started Frankel & Frankel almost 3 decades ago, we set out to help injured people and get them the results they deserve. The call and consultation are always free.
FRENKEL. Call Frankel first, 214 or 817-333-3333.